Here.
Our speaker today is Steve Leonardi. And forgive me, this is the one thing I guess I didn't have prepared. But he is going to be talking about the seven N's of resilience. Steve has been a member for since 2001. And instead of making you watch me try to prepare, I'll just let him get into it.
And I'm not really a microphone person. I prefer using the teacher voice, but I will try using the microphone. Is this working? Good? Okay. Thank you all for being here. Good morning. I'd like to start with an excerpt from a poem, Good Bones, by Maggie Smith. Life is short, though I keep this from my children. The world is at least 50% terrible, and that's a conservative estimate, though I keep this from my children. For every bird, there is a stone thrown at a bird. For every loved child, a child broken, banked, sunk in a lake. Life is short, and the world is at least half terrible. And for every kind stranger, there is one who would break you, though I keep this from my children. I am trying to sell them the world. Any decent realtor walking you through a real shithole chirps on about good bones. This place could be beautiful, right? You could make this place beautiful. Every time I walk in that door, and especially standing up here, I'm just amazed by this group of volunteers, caregivers, activists, truth seekers. You are the people making this place beautiful. Our community, our state, our country, our world, and I'm just humbled and inspired, really, to be part of this. So thank you. It's exhausting work, and it's often demoralizing. Sometimes we feel like Sisyphus. That's the rock he pushes. Sisyphus is a character from Greek mythology who is condemned by the gods to push a massive boulder up a steep hill every day, only to have the boulder roll back down where it was waiting for him to push it back up the hill the next day. We all have our individual challenges. The first two that come to my mind are helping my mother as she ages and the current military invasion of ICE agents in Minnesota. I want to acknowledge my white male privilege. I live a relatively easy and sheltered life. I cannot imagine the difficulty of being homeless or in financial distress, living with long-term chronic pain, losing a spouse or child, or living in a war zone, or having my child deported. I'm guessing that many of you are also facing challenges of aging or health and challenges of the current political climate. You might also be struggling with loss of a loved one, difficult relationships, mental health, addiction, worries about money, frustrations, or uncertainties about work. We've all had to develop our personal practices to stay resilient. I'd like to ask you to take a few seconds and silently answer this question. What is one practice that you use to foster and nurture your resilience? So I'm going to give you just 5 seconds. Choose the first thing that comes into your mind. What's something you do or something you practice to bolster your resilience? Go.
Patience.
No, quietly, quietly. Yeah, it's okay. You can use that if you want, but that's a, yeah, okay. Not a quiet group, I know, but I'm gonna ask you to do that. Okay, so hopefully you have one. Now here's the game. If you picked patience, your letter is P. I'm gonna give you 15 seconds. You have to think of as many practices that grow your resilience, but they all have to start with the letter P. Ready? You have 15 seconds. The goal is quantity, not quality. It's a contest. Go, quietly though, quietly, go. I'll give you 15 seconds. Okay, that's time. Stop. Did everybody get at least one? Good. Two, three, four, any, a couple fours, any fives? Good. Okay, six, 5. So we have a tie for 5. Let's applaud for the test. It was, remind me of your name. You had 5, right? Your name? Matt. Yeah, Patrick. And was there? Oh, Patrick wins. Okay. Congratulations, Patrick. Congratulations after the talk. I know this group likes to talk. If you can take about 20 seconds, share with somebody nearby what resilience practices did you come up with during that time, if you're comfortable sharing. Go ahead. 20 seconds. Okay, I'm going to cut you off. I've got lots to talk about here. But please continue after the service. I have to give credit for this exercise to a friend of mine who's very creative and quick thinking. She once told me, I'm not sure I believe her, but she once told me when she's asked to give a presentation, sometimes she prepares ahead of time, other times she just prepares it on the way there. She gives herself a prompt such as, there are 7 N's that are the keys to resilience, or whatever her topic is, and then on the way there she tries to think of 7 N's. I can't do that on short notice, so I did this about 2 months ago on the drive between Winona and St. Paul, so I gave myself a couple hours. That was my initial outline, and I worked on it from there. So I'm going to share my practices. I'm guessing we have some overlap. My first 4 are pretty basic, and in fact, we've had presentations here at UU on I think all of these topics several times. My first 4 N's of resiliency are, 1, nature. 2, networks of neighbors. 3, music. And 4, noticing the positive. Okay, I know music doesn't start with N, but I found a workaround. So I'll get to that. So nature, 1. Most of us value spending time in nature. Resiliency and adapting to stress of changing conditions are basic principles of the natural world. I believe that spending time in nature can provide all of us with profound calming, healing, and strengthening benefits. 2, network. Probably would use a different phrase, such as relationships, or friends and family, or community. And if I'm being honest, I think relationships are more important than nature for most people, including me. It tells you how introverted I am that I thought of nature first and not being with other people. 3, music. Doesn't start with N? Yeah, okay. Nocturnal music. But I also listen during the day. Nocturnal and non-nocturnal music. Yeah, got it. Okay. Sure, I really believe, you know, and music is a big part of our services here. I'm so grateful for the PIPA and the choir and the people that organize the music. Johnson Street Underground, it's, you know, we're blessed with a wealth of music in this fellowship and in Winona in general. And I really believe it has just mystical healing properties. I don't get it, but I really believe in that. One of the things I like about this game or this exercise is there's a sense of playfulness, right? You know, I chose music, and then I found a way to make it start with N. You can be creative. Make up the rules as you go. Bend the rules if you need to. Calvin ball, you know. This game also emphasizes a sense of resourcefulness and abundance. The answers lie within you. Too often in difficult times, our instinct is to withdraw into caution and defensiveness, to view the world through a lens of scarcity, safety, or victimhood. We feel that we have to protect ourselves against injury and loss, or that life has treated us unfairly, or that we can't get through it without some kind of divine intervention. Okay, 4, noticing the positive, also known as gratitude. I'm sure we've had several talks on this. A lot of different ways to do this. The random acts of kindness that Barb talks about. You can begin or end each day by finding things to give thanks for. You might keep a gratitude journal. I also want to emphasize that I'm very intentionally calling these things practices. You don't benefit much from walking in the woods just once or from acknowledging your family and friends without making the effort of seeing them and communicating with them. You have to intentionally spend time and effort to make these things happen on a regular basis. It's like learning to play a musical instrument or a sport. Some days will go better than others. You will make mistakes. You won't do it perfectly. You will have days you don't feel like reaching out or leaving the house or writing in your gratitude journal. Honestly, when I've tried to keep a gratitude journal, it's usually turned into a worries and complaints journal. But if you do it anyway, as often as you can, the cumulative effect is stronger than the benefit from any one individual day. If you skip a day or two, it's okay. My fifth resilience practice is one that you might not agree with. So number five, noticing the negative. This practice is somewhat trickier and more subtle than the others. I'm not saying wallow in your sorrows or feel sorry for yourself, drink whiskey alone in the dark. There is a danger of slipping into that that we need to avoid. But I do think that the advice about resiliency that tells you to give yourself a spa day or any other advice that ignores the negative is rightfully dismissed as superficial or tone-deaf at best and crass commercialization into a cottage industry at its worst. Jenny talked about this a little bit. My same friend who suggested the seven ends game, she has an expression for this practice of noticing the negative. She calls it embrace the suck. In other words, our adversities, our challenging times have something to teach us. The only way to get through it is to get through it. Feel what you are feeling. Honor your worries, your fears, your pain, your disappointment, your despair. They are real, valid feelings. Life is suffering, as the Buddhists teach us. Attachment to outcomes brings suffering. We cannot avoid suffering. We can realize that who we are is not the same as our suffering. This is all also maybe sort of the destroy the ego idea. But we can only get through that suffering when we acknowledge it and fully experience it. The American poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow has a neighborhood in South Minneapolis, right next to Powderhorn neighborhood, named after him. He said something that it's such a good quote, it made it onto a bookmark. Here it is. The best thing one can do when it's raining is to let it rain. I'd like to share another reading. It's kind of a paradoxical Zen koan. This is from the Sufi musician and philosopher Hazrat Inayat Khan. You may have heard this before. I asked for strength, and God gave me difficulties to make me strong. I asked for wisdom, and God gave me problems to learn to solve. I asked for courage, and God gave me dangers to overcome. I asked for love, and God gave me people to help. I asked for favors, and God gave me opportunities. I received nothing I wanted. I received everything I needed. I think this reading is a little bit subtle and maybe even problematic. It's often misinterpreted or quoted out of context. The moral is not that everything is fine, everything will work out okay. My take on this reading is that our resilience and our moral qualities develop in response to challenges. It sucks, but that's the only way we can grow. Our physical muscles grow only through overload, strain, and recovery. The same is true with our moral and spiritual muscles. They only grow when we are challenged and then supported in our challenges and then allowed to recover. I'd like to step back a minute and mention two things that are not resiliency practices, conquering and conceding. I gave a UU talk many years ago discussing why these two viewpoints are unhelpful. So if you had either of these on your list, you're just wrong. And here's why. Resilience is not the same as conquering our challenges or believing that our side will always win. Our side will not always win. The chemo and radiation won't always get rid of the cancer. Relationships cannot always be healed, no matter how much effort we put into them. The seeds we plant in our garden will not always grow, no matter how many songs we sing or poems we read to them. The massive boulder that we push up the hill will often, maybe even usually, roll back down the hill when we reach the top. But resilience is also not the same as conceding or giving up and resigning ourselves to our suffering. We have a moral obligation to keep pushing the huge boulder up the hill. Not only that, but doing the right thing, doing the compassionate, loving thing, can become our purpose. The French existentialist philosopher and novelist Albert Camus wrote a long essay arguing this viewpoint entitled The Myth of Sisyphus. Camus says that we can rebel against oppression and meaninglessness by embracing the struggle and finding happiness in the effort itself, concluding, one must imagine Sisyphus happy. Camus didn't just write about embracing the struggle, he was very active in the French resistance at his own personal risk during World War II. My sixth resilience practice on my list does start with N, not knowing. I think Paul Stern talked about this one a little bit. We could also call it humility. This has two different facets. One facet is not knowing how things will turn out. As I just mentioned, when we're struggling with illness or relationship or a challenging political climate, we put effort in, but we don't know how it's going to come out. I've learned to focus on process, not outcome. Do the right thing, do the work to make your place beautiful, but don't get down on yourself or be discouraged when it doesn't work out like you hoped. The second facet of not knowing is more along the lines of withholding judgment or perspective or openness to considering different viewpoints. We are so certain of the correctness of our viewpoints and our proposed solutions that we have a hard time hearing or appreciating the viewpoints of others. We become rigid and brittle. Resilience requires us to bend, to understand and relate to all those around us, especially those we disagree with, and to be humble about what we know to be true. The seventh, final, and I believe the most important resilience practice on my list is compassion. To make it start with N, I'll call it never not practicing compassion. You'll notice that my first six practices are mostly reflective as opposed to active, and mostly solitary as opposed to social. That kind of reflects me. Your list is probably different. But I do believe that fostering and nurturing resilience also requires action in terms of both giving compassion and receiving compassion. That's really the end goal. I believe, as many Buddhists teach, that compassion is the source and container of all spiritual values. Compassion means both suffering with and caring for each other. It can take many different forms. It can be making soup for the caring committee, giving someone a ride, checking in on a neighbor. It can be the random acts of kindness. The surprising thing about compassion is it can be just as strengthening and healing to give compassion as it is to receive compassion. Dalai Lama talks about this frequently. So again, I'm going to give you my list of seven: nature, relationships, music, noticing the positive, noticing the negative, not knowing, and compassion. For the last part of my talk, I'd like to tell you about two highly recommended books and how they helped me understand the connection between resilience and joy. The first book, this is a library copy. It's actually the adult version of the children's story that was read before Jenny's talk a couple weeks ago. In 2015, when the Dalai Lama was having an 80th birthday party, he met with the Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and they conducted a series of conversations over the course of about a week with an interviewer and moderator, Douglas Abrams, and they wrote an adult version of the book and a kid's version of the book. As a framework for their discussions, I highly recommend it, especially the audiobook. They have voice actors sort of imitate the Dalai Lama and the Archbishop, and it's just lovely to listen to. But they kind of used as a framework the eight pillars of joy. You ready for the eight pillars of joy? I won't make you try to come up with them first. They are perspective, humility, humor, acceptance, forgiveness, compassion, gratitude, and generosity. What do you notice about this list and my list? Well, they don't all start with N, that is true. I feel like there's a lot of overlap. And this I think I was about in Prescott, and I'm like, well, how can this be? Why? Like, because resilience is what we need during difficult times. It's like protecting ourselves or living through a difficult time. Whereas joy is like, woohoo, you know, going down a big slide or something. Didn't make sense to me. So I thought about this for a while. I think I finally came up with an explanation. When we talk about resilience, we're not just talking about survival or not breaking. We're talking about thriving. We're talking about living a worthwhile and meaningful life in spite of our difficulties. We're talking about still finding joy, even in the midst of adversity. On the other hand, what is joy? Joy is not just a day at the spa, or a nice meal at a restaurant, or temporary pleasure. I thought of Vikings winning the Super Bowl, but then I was like, oh, that's a bad example, right? What is joy? Joy is deep, spiritual, and lasting. Joy is only genuine if it incorporates our very real challenges, our pain, loss, and suffering. One could even say it is not possible to have true joy unless it includes and incorporates our sorrows. Where's our moderator? There was one other book I'd love to say a little bit about. I don't have a copy of it. Again, I listened to the audio book, but it's written by Nick Cave, how many people have heard of Nick Cave? He's an Australian singer-songwriter, kind of indie rock musician guy. I didn't know much about him, but through a different musician I know, he recommended this book, Faith, Hope, and Carnage, which is kind of a conversational memoir. And then later I found this incredible interview with Anderson Cooper on Anderson Cooper's podcast. I highly recommend. He's just got some crazy things to say that really made me think about this. His 15-year-old son died 10 years ago, and he's still working through this grief, and the book deals with that a lot, and the interview deals with that a lot. Here's what Nick Cave has to say. I feel I was an incomplete or unformed human before my son died. Something happened that completely shattered myself and broke apart my relationship with the world, so that putting the pieces back together again, I found that I became an entirely different person with a different relationship with the world. I would say I became more fully human. What I came to understand is that we are all creatures of loss. We are all suffering in our own ways. I think the world is suffering in a collective way. The world is suffering from loss. It is the thing that holds us together. And then he goes on to say how he views joy as something that springs out of sorrow. I'd like to close with a blessing from the author, Kate Bowler. Bless you who have only this breath, honesty, an unfinished self. Let go of the story that says it all works out. Receive instead the grace of trying. Bless you who ask not for answers, but for enough strength to take the next step. You go on, held by love, the way uncertain, never alone. Thank you.
I think we've got time for a couple questions.
If I'm willing, yeah. But yeah, I don't want to keep people. If I can talk to people afterwards, also.